Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for the Doctors Roundtable, a forum for conversations with Atlanta's leading doctors and thought leaders about cutting-edge trends and topics in health, wellness, and lifestyle issues. Here's our host, Tanya Mack.
Good afternoon, Atlanta, and thank you so much for listening. It is a bright, sunny day in Atlanta, and hopefully we will have an excellent show today. We have a new topic. We're going to be talking about the care of your face over time, from normal through facelifts, and I think there's going to be a lot of listeners out there interested in that. I have a repeat guest with me today who bought a friend, so let me introduce both of them. Dr. John Connors from Plastic Surgery of Atlanta is here as our guest for the second time, so welcome back.
Great to be here.
And Dr. Connors, just so you know a little bit about him, is board certified in two areas, as general surgery and plastic surgery as well. He got his medical degree from Georgetown University. His general surgery residency was done at Dartmouth. And then he moved all the way up to the big house in Harvard to do your plastic and reconstructive surgery. We were just talking about your children's visit back down memory lane at Boston. So that sounds like it was a lot of fun.
We had a great time.
So certainly a great pedigree of talent here. Dr. Connor's also been featured on CBC 11 Alive. He does numerous speaking engagements and teaching exercises. And we're going to talk at the end a little bit about his nonprofit, which is called Emergence Surgical Lifts. He does reconstructive surgery for children as part of his life's work. So we're going to talk about that at the end. And he bought a great friend today, whom I just met recently, but welcome to Kim Bogash.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
It's good to have you here. So Kim's specialty is she's a licensed esthetician, and she talks to us a little bit. And we're going to start with you, Kim, talking just about our face and basic skincare. When I was doing some of the research, I was thinking about how the face is how we present ourselves, a lot of how we relate. We look in the mirror every day, and so it's one of the parts of our bodies that we really pay attention to and how we present ourselves to the world. Mm-hmm. And so we are very attached to our faces, and we try to take care of them over time, no matter what our age. So we're going to do a little bit of ever from normal to how we can improve it over time. But let's start with you and talk in general about what are some basics of good skincare at any age.
So, kind of starting from the beginning, you always want to have your face thoroughly clean. So a good face wash is always the best thing to start with, exfoliating on a regular basis.
If what's you're regular?
Depending on which way you want to go. Mm-hmm. You can come in and do, services in the office, anywhere from 4 to 6 weeks, to doing something at home like a retinol or a little exfoliating scrub every other night, and just making sure you're keeping your face moisturized, and wearing sunscreen is key, especially this time of year.
And so through the ages, if we talk about a patient who's, or any of us that are just like in our, or would we do something at ages, like would I do something at 40 or 50 that's different at 20?
It just depends on how much sun damage you have. Unfortunately, everything that I do is really dependent on where you live. A person who lived in Florida is going to have far more sun damage than a person who lived in, say, Alaska. But really just depends on what your conditions are. So say an 18-year-old were to come in and say, what can I do to improve my skin? And just doing something more just calming and cleaning and just thoroughly cleaning the skin out and making sure that they're, educating them on how to take good care of it. Whereas a person that were in their 40s and 50s, we can start them out with a little more aggressive. We can do chemical peels to help brighten the skin, smooth out fine lines,
things like that. We're going to get into that. So first get a basic routine, and the routine is cleanse and exfoliate a little bit. What about moisturizing?
Moisturizing is very important. And it just depends on how oily your skin is. You can use a light serum just to keep it good and hydrated. If you feel like in the wintertime especially that you need something a little heavier, maybe going with a cream or a lotion just to make sure that that sticks with your skin pretty well. And then, as I said, sunscreen is key.
Very good. So cleanse, exfoliate, moisturize, sunscreen.
Yes.
Okay, so we're in the throes of summer, and everybody's wondering, so I want to look a little tan, but I don't want to be exposed. So what are some of the recommendations on SPF, what we put on our face? After we're in the sun, is there anything we do for our face?
So you want to make sure that you're using a proper sunscreen, and anything SPF 30 and above is going to be good. Really, SPF 30 to SPF 50 is about as strong as you're going to get. And it's reapplying that's the key. About every hour and a half to 2 hours, you want to just reapply if you're basking in the sun. And as far as getting a tan, fake tanning is just the way to go. It's just the way to go. So you can get a good spray tan. If you do insist on being out in the sun, just reapply, and you're going to get a little color one way or another. You just don't want to burn. And then if you burn, just use something like a good barrier cream just to help protect your skin and have it heal properly.
Okay, so protection is the key for this time. And probably, what about hydrating your skin, drinking a lot of water, making sure that you stay hydrated?
Yeah, drinking a lot of water is going to be really important. Okay. And then, you know, aloe is just a really good option if you do get in that kind of burned situation.
Mm-hmm. For healing.
Don't. Yes.
Yes. Okay, so that takes about from the beginning through the season that we're in. But I know there's a lot that we can do in skincare as far as procedurally when we come in the office. Mm-hmm. So I know that patients will come in. You already mentioned we'll take a look at where your beginning point is. But what are some common treatments that patients can have to improve the skin just from when they come in?
So one of my favorite things I like to do is microdermabrasion.
Okay, so educate us a little bit about that.
So a lot of people have, because everyone asks, you know, what's it going to feel like? Is it going to hurt? And a lot of people have said, it kind of feels like a cat licking my skin. Oh. It's just like, it's a light vacuum. It has a bit of a coarseness to the wand that I'm applying to the skin. And what that's going to do is slough away a good dead layer of skin, especially after the summertime when you're trying to recover. And that in turn is going to help any product that we apply during the treatment and then thereafter when you're at home, it's going to penetrate in 10 to 50% more than it would had you not had something like that done.
Okay, so is that something that we would repeat over time, or is that a one-time thing?
I like to tell my patients to come in at least 4 times a year to get that done, so at the end of every season.
Okay, so that's pretty consistent to have mm-hmm. the best results. Mm-hmm. Now, another question I have about microdermabrasion is, like, I have really sensitive skin, and I always feel like if somebody's scrubbing it or doing something to it, I'm going to be like glowing red for days.
Oh, so, well, glowing's what you want.
Yes. Not radiating, though.
Not radiating red. What I do is I kind of watch the sensitivity of the skin. You can always adjust it so we can lighten up the vacuum to it. There's different coarsenesses that I can use on the wand.
Okay, very good. So let's move on then to peels. So I know a lot of my friends, there's variations in the strength and intensity and results of peels. Mm-hmm. So why don't you just walk us through a couple of options?
Okay, so there are light peels. If, you know, some people who are interested in trying out chemical peels are afraid of what they're going to do, I always like to start them out a little light. There are glycolic peels, there's the AHA peels, where you actually don't experience the dramatic actual skin peeling. Mm-hmm. You might experience a little bit of dryness, yes, mm-hmm. but not the actual, you know, the flare of peeling. Mm-hmm. And then there are other peels that are still going to offer you that good correctiveness. They're going to be a little stronger and you peel for a few days. Mm-hmm. And then there are the stronger peels where you peel, you know, for 10 to 14 days. I mm-hmm. have a lot of people always ask about that episode of Sex and the City where Samantha's peeling for like ever and it's just the most
awful experience.
Never
going away.
So I've never seen it, but I always reference
right.
that. And those are out there and I do offer those, but
and then what can you expect as far as results? So obviously the lighter the solution or the peel that you put on, you're not going to get the big dramatic baby skin results.
Right. So if you want to go the lighter route, I would just recommend coming in more frequently. So if you want to stick with that, I'd say come in maybe every 4 to 6 weeks and just prepare to peel, you know, over a weekend, just that often. If you want to, you know, nip your condition in the butt, I'd say come in 3 times, peel more heavily each time that you come in. And wrap things up in a couple of months period.
Okay. So it just kind of depends on what course you personally want to go through to get the result that
right.
you want. Very good. And then you work in Dr. Connor's office, so you're pretty much available to be seen there.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Very good. Well, thanks for your input on the lighter end of the spectrum of how to take care of our face.
Of course.
Now to Dr. Connor. So we go beyond the peels and we get into some
non-invasive
things.
Oh my
god. Yeah, but the end result, you're going to get me very encouraged here because you're going to tell me I'm going to look years younger at the end, right? Maybe. Hopefully we get to some of that possibility. But let's start with some of the non-invasive things. So I know, why don't you walk us through some of the non-invasive types of techniques from like fillers that can make a difference on your face? Just kind of what is the next steps we'd take if we went through things with Kim, but we're still looking for more results.
Sure. Well, Tanya, it's great to see you again. It's great to be here. Last time I saw you was the dead of winter.
It was.
And now I see you today, and you tell me you've been on a vacation,
I
and
have.
You're tan, and you look great. Hopefully you put some sunscreen on, and you learn a little bit about what we're talking about today, because
right.
it's really important. Just listening to you, both of you talk before, I think some of the concepts that I try to really instill in the patients is that you can't pigeonhole everybody according to their age.
Right.
You can't say, okay, at age 20 I do this, at age 30 I do this, 40, 50. Because there are a number of factors that everybody experiences, the first and foremost being your genetics.
Mm-hmm.
Your mom and your dad gave you the skin that you have,
mm-hmm.
okay? And you can't
trade it in.
Trade in your
mm-hmm.
genes,
mm-hmm.
so to speak, right? So that's important. And everybody carries that characteristic with them, and we help them kind of understand that. The next is the environment,
mm-hmm.
you know, the UV rays from the sun, the smog from the city. You know, Atlanta's a big city, and there's a lot of environmental, mm-hmm. you know, toxins. So that's number two. And then the exposure over your lifetime. You know, there are a number of twin studies out there where one twin lives in a relatively innocuous environment, low sun, low smog, and the other lives in the sun. And you really see the change and the aging in those twins, mm-hmm. the differences over the years. So there's multiple factors that have to be involved in patients' care. And I think age is important
mm-hmm.
for some of the light bulbs to go off. But we really, you know, focus in our practice on really taking care of the whole patient, their mm-hmm. genetics, their environment, and everything, and educating them. I mean, we really kind of are proud of our education system. And Kim is great. She has super experience. We love to talk, as you can tell. But it educates patients. And so to move through some of these, I tell patients my concept is really I evaluate you in the office.
Mm-hmm.
One of the major things that I see in patients over time is what's happening to the skin. Our skin gets thinner. When it gets thinner, it loses its elasticity.
Mm-hmm.
It loses some of the components of volume. When you lose volume in the skin, you start to see fine lines and the dreaded wrinkles and everything. But you also lose volume in the soft tissues of your face. And when you lose soft tissue volume, gravity takes over. And gravity is that other G that you know,
mm-hmm.
genes and gravity affect folks in different ways mm-hmm. and detrimental to the point where we have to keep an eye on the volume. So volumizing the skin, a lot of the peels, as you talked about, can help build some collagen. And then you can get into some of the fillers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are some fillers, dermal fillers, which replace volume in certain specific areas where you're depleted, and you can fill that volume and iron out a wrinkle. I'm a big fan of volumizers, and the difference between a filler and a volumizer is the filler fills a line, the volumizer fills the face. And so, you know, I use a lot of products deep in the soft tissue, near the bone, to rejuvenate the soft tissue volume, which rejuvenates the face. You know, it's being marketed as the liquid facelift.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's not surgery, so mm-hmm. it's hard. I don't want to confuse patients and think, oh, I'm getting a facelift with some injectables. Not true. We're restoring volume. And I have many patients that will come in that have had facelifts, and they're not happy.
Mm-hmm.
They've had facelifts by other surgeons years ago or recently. And it's not necessarily a skin lifting issue. It's more a volume issue, and we'll replace volume, and years are shed. I mean, it's mm-hmm. amazing what happens.
So I'm sure when you do the volume injections,
mm-hmm.
it depends on where on the face you're injecting, but how long would those be expected to last? Because I know, like, if we do some fillers, we're going to have a limited time that's really – we're seeing the results of that.
Yeah, and it's – you know, each one of the fillers you know, some of the fillers, I use the analogy of tomatoes, okay, because everybody goes to the grocery store and sees tomatoes. You have the beefsteak tomato, the big, mm-hmm. huge tomato, the heirloom tomato, and you have the little grape small tomato.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the fillers, and typically hyaluronic acids, it depends on the size of the filler and how long it lasts. So there are some fillers that are heirloom tomatoes and takes you forever to get through it, and so it takes a long time to mm-hmm. go away. So typically 10 months to a year. Some other fillers, 4 to 6 months. They're smaller,
mm-hmm.
so the body breaks them up faster.
Mm-hmm.
I do have patients that are very active. They love to go to the gym. They work out 1 to 2 hours a day. Those patients in my practice, I notice that they tend to chew through some of those fillers mm-hmm. and those volumizers a little bit faster because I think it's, you know, fluctuations in their blood pressure and activity. So I tell them up front, listen, we're going to fill these areas, but you need to know that it might not last as long as others.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we do have fillers that are semi-permanent, will last 2 to 3 years.
Mm-hmm. And where is the most common place on the face that you would use fillers and volumizers?
Typically in the cheeks.
Okay.
In the malar area. That's the medical term, the malar area. Mm-hmm. When I was a medical student, one of the first things we learned in physical examination of the patient was the temples. And patients will come in and say, I feel aged, but I can't, you know, oh, I have lines on the side of my nose, the nasolabial fold, can you fill it? and I'll look at it and say, listen, you've lost volume in your cheeks. If we restore volume, it'll pull that shadowing away, and you won't need a filler in that area. But the temples is a big one, the cheeks, and typically in the marionette lines or the lines that are at the side of the mouth, as we age, we lose skeletal volume. It's that skeletal volume, not only in the mandible, which gives you the marionette lines, but also in the nasolabial folds in the maxilla.
Very good. And so beyond the volumizers, are there any other minimally invasive things that are techniques that you would use before we would try the facelift route?
You know, we use neuromodulators. Those are the medicines like Botox and ZMN and Dysport that freeze muscles, because it's the muscle activity on thinning skin that causes wrinkles. And, you know, there's been some recent data that shows that starting the neuromodulators early can help prevent future wrinkles. And the more consistent you are receiving your neuromodulators, the less often, and then the lower the dose. So it's good maintenance. You know, that's
so compared invasive to surgical kind of intervention, what is kind of a ratio for patients that you treat? The majority are non-invasive?
I would say majority. Sure.
Okay.
And there is a crossover. We have patients that are surgical patients that we also restore volume. We do a lot of specific smart lipo, focused liposuction in the office, typically in the jowls, that area of the chin, and the lower neck. The lower neck really ages patients. And some fullness and some droopiness or sagging in that area really, you know, I have men that will come in and say, Dr. Connors, I can't tie my tie because I can't button my shirt because I have this fullness in my neck, and we'll do a little liposuction there and sculpt out the neck, and that helps. And that really, you know, sends the ages back too. I mean, patients are really rejuvenated just with that minor procedure in the office. You know, we have surgical patients, but a majority of our patients are the patients that will come in and we'll talk about, you know, fillers and volumizers.
So one of the things that I've read about doing the research for this show is that there's more men coming in for work. Although the majority looks like it's still women, it looks like men continue to grow as far as patients looking at facelifts or face options year after year. And it looks like it's pretty consistent growth. I look like on the demographics over the past 3 or 4 years, looks like over 5% every year continue to be more and more men and more people opting for face work.
Yeah, Tanya, I think it's more than that.
Do you?
Oh, yeah.
What do you 5% think it is?
I think it's conservative.
Okay.
Over the last 5 years, I've, in my practice, have noticed about a 450% increase in the number of men.
Wow.
So, you know, I think it's plastic surgery is, the concept of it is, you know, it's a little more accepted. I think people, both men and women, talk about it a little bit more. It's not something that's done in secrecy. And, you know, I think with all the advancements as well, I think men accept it a little bit more. You know, a couple years ago, with the issues with the stock market and the general economy, patients and folks were staying in their jobs longer. And the most common commentary that I heard from both men and women in the professional businesses is, I've got to stay, you know, employed for a little bit longer, and I need to look my best, so what can I do? And so I think that's what helped our male practice increase. But yeah, in my practice in the last 5 years, 450% increase. So
that's amazing. Since we're talking about demographics, another question I wanted to ask you today was, at what age you kind of start working on the face? A good example is, like, when I was a kid, my mother was considering a facelift in her 40s, and I thought she was crazy. And now that I'm well past that, I'm thinking she was smart. So what are some trends that you see that people start doing different kinds of things, maybe earlier than we would expect?
You know me, Tanya. I'm very conservative, and I think, again, it my advice is watch the age issue, because, you know,
look at the overall factors that are you uniquely you,
multifactorial. I have patients that come in their 20s and will need some neuromodulators, and I have patients come in their 60s that have never had anything in their entire lives, and they look great, but they're starting to see some aging. Again, I think the advice, the best advice, and I've given you this advice before, is to make sure that the radio audience sees a board-certified surgeon, because there are a lot of physicians out there and non-physicians that brand themselves as cosmetic surgeons, And, you know, I think that there are some poster children and maybe celebrities that have had too much done.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, it's any age is okay, but remain conservative. I think every surgeon has their own artistic sense and bend. And I've told you this story before. You know, I go to the museums and I have a certain, you know, artistic attitude that I like. And every surgeon is different. So I think that, you know, I've done facelifts on patients in their 40s. I've done facelifts on patients in their 90s, believe it or not.
Wow.
So it runs the gamut. And I think that, you know, education is key. Mm-hmm. We customize every one of our consults. What I offer patients is not cookie cutter medicine. Mm-hmm. It's really individualized, and we spend a lot of time with patients.
There's a lot to the art of it.
Yeah, there is.
There's a lot to the art of it too. Well, let's get into the facelift part of it.
Sure.
So we've kind of worked through the non-invasive steps and the basic steps, but I do want to talk a little bit because I think there's some confusion out there in the market about different kinds of facelifts, or you hear like the. I don't know. I've heard everything from
lunchtime lift.
Yes, yeah, the lunchtime lift. I mean, there's all kinds of them out there. There's probably three or four, and people are wondering, you know, maybe you could just take a few minutes to distinguish them, and then we'll kind of walk through what's typical.
You know, I think the first facelift, quote unquote, that was done at the turn of the century, like 1900.
I actually looked that up. It was 1901 in Berlin. You were very good. I was off on the numbers, but you were exactly right on the year. Yeah.
Well, that was basically a skin tuck. The surgeon pulled skin back, mm-hmm. and you know that's the way it was done for many, many years. But we found that just tucking the skin didn't last very long because it was the tissues underneath the skin that were ptotic or were drooping and sagging over time. So, you know, fast forward 90 years, 100 years, there are a number of techniques. And again, I think the beauty of plastic surgery is that we're innovators. You know, we're always looking to do something better for our patients. There are a number of techniques, and we apply those techniques on an individual basis. Everything is customized. Now, again, I warn patients. There are the marketing techniques that are out there, and you see it on the televisions, and, you know, you can have your lunchtime lift, and I tell my patients that it probably might last till dinner, but just be very careful of that.
You know? You get what you pay for.
That's right. But so, you know, there are patients that say, listen, I don't have a lot of downtime. So, you know, the more invasive you are, the more downtime and recovery time you're going to need. And I think plastic surgeons, myself included, we look at your face, we look at the skin, we look at the structures, we look at what needs to be done. And if it's surgery, then, you know, that's what's going to give you your best result. Mm-hmm. Now, in training, when I was training in Boston, we used to have surgeons come from all over the world. And I always tell patients, the United States has not cornered the market on the world's greatest plastic surgeons that come from all over. And we saw some just beautiful results in all the meetings that we go to. Patients are always asking, how long is it going to last?
Right.
And I think that, you know, an aggressive facelift might last you 15 or 20 years.
That seems long.
But the first 5 to 8 years, you look odd. You look like you
kind of settle into your new face.
You stepped into a wind tunnel, and it looks odd because, you know, it's going to drop. So I think I tell my patients 5 to 8 years on a facelift is a conservative facelift with a great result that you can be very proud of and very happy of.
Mm-hmm. Very good. So tell us a little bit about what is going to happen. I'm a patient. I come to your office. I've had my consult. You've looked at me individually. We agree we're going to have a facelift. Just kind of what can I expect? So, outpatient, in the office, pain management, kind of the nuts and bolts of what would I experience?
So typically for a facelift, we do it in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
We have to put you to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And the operation can take anywhere from 3 hours to 6 or 7 hours, depending on the components of the operation that we're performing. Are we operating on the eyelids and cheeks and necks and everything? I do keep my patients overnight.
Mm-hmm.
I like the nurses to watch their blood pressure. Each patient has to have a physical examination by their primary care doctor. We check their medicines. We make sure they're compatible. Blood pressure is the main issue. The biggest complication after facelift surgery is typically bleeding,
mm-hmm.
so we really monitor their blood pressure carefully. I use a dressing, a compressive dressing around the neck and the face, and I joke with patients. I call it their brain transplant dressing because it's a little compressive.
Mm-hmm.
We take that out and take that off the next day.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, patients can be a little bruised mm-hmm. and swollen. Mm-hmm. That bruising and swelling typically goes down the first week, and we have some very fancy herbal medicines and other medicines that help with the swelling. So I tell patients, listen, you're not going to want to go to the grocery store for about a week. You have someone help
you. You're going to have to hide out a little bit.
That's right, mm-hmm. a little bit. And some bruising can last, you know, that first week into the second week. Once you're going to venture out, lots of sunscreen. The skin will be sensitive. We take stitches out at about a week. Some we take out at 2 weeks.
Do most of them have drains for a day or two?
It depends. Men, when we do neck work on men, each hair follicle in their beard has a blood supply.
There you go.
A robust blood supply.
So a little different problem. Mm-hmm.
Right. So men have a higher risk of bleeding.
Mm-hmm.
So men, I pretty much tell them, you're going to have a drain or two.
Mm-hmm.
But I take that drain out the next morning.
Okay. So not for long.
It's a time drain. You know, as a nurse, there's mm-hmm. time drains and there's volume drains.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the other procedures are volume drains, so they stay until a certain volume. But this is a time drain. I take it out the next day. So no drains to go home with.
Mm-hmm.
I have patients sleep in a certain position that helps with the
swelling.
Swelling and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But and that's typically – I get patients back at the gym at 2 weeks. I want them to be active. The more patients lay in bed, the more they lay in bed. So I like to get them up, mobilize them, get them moving. Back at the gym at 2 weeks, back lifting weights and running and those kind of things at about 4 to 6 weeks.
So another question I think the listeners would have, and I know your answer is going to be it depends on the individual, which we know that you've looked at their individual face, but I think a lot of people are wondering about combination of procedures. Like when I think of facelift, I think of like the lower third of my face or the incision around my ears and the lifting up from the lower third of the face, but is it common or not common that people could combine with an eye or combine with the nose? Like how much can you really do? I know it depends on the person, but what are some kind of guidelines that you think about?
My guidelines are time in the operating room.
Okay.
Because for me, the longer in the procedure is in the operating room, the higher the risk. So I have each operation in my head. It is customized, individualized. But it depends on the patient, how long I think it's going to take.
Mm-hmm.
But typically, Tanya, we do upper eyelids, lower eyelids in combination with a face and a neck lift. So then you're lifting the upper face, sometimes a brow lift too.
Mm-hmm.
So upper face, then we talk about mid face, which is cheek. So upper face would be brows, eyelids, sometimes the temples.
Mm-hmm.
Middle third of the face would be cheeks. And lower third would be jowls and neck.
Mm-hmm.
That's how we kind of look at it.
What about cheek implants? I know that used to be common, I think, with some of the new volumizers that you were talking about before, maybe not so common. Do you still do that? Or
yeah, I don't do a lot of – in residency, one of the professors that I worked with is world famous for cheek implants and implants around the face.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, his results are fantastic. My spin on that is that I really like some of the semi-permanent fillers because as you age, again, the studies have shown that your skeletal volume changes, your soft tissue volume changes, and you know if we can volumize you to the point where then it's maintenance every 3 to 5 years, I can adjust for that.
Mm-hmm. Versus but you put an implant in and you're fixed with how it is.
It is what it is, and it might look great the time that it's put in. But I'd have to adjust.
That's a good point.
So I like the creativity
you more flexibility.
And artistic, mm-hmm. yeah,
give ability. You a lot more flexibility.
Right, right.
Very, very good. Okay, let's. I would love to hear one of the things that I've been talking to physicians about as they've come to the doctor's roundtable is we've heard some fascinating stories about your success stories. So I'm sure there's been a patient or two that even you yourself thought, oh my God, look at what we did here. Is there any that stand out in your mind as a challenge, and then what you were able to accomplish?
Tanya, you know the deal. Every single day is a great day in our office. Mm-hmm. I mean, patients are so happy. It's one of the reasons why I migrated into this profession. Patients are truly happy, and whether it's facial rejuvenation, cosmetics, or facial reconstruction, you know, we do see patients that, you know, need facial reconstruction, whether it's from cancer or trauma. As far as facial rejuvenation, you know, we just saw a patient this morning. She came in. She's in her 40s. She said, Dr. Connors, everybody says I look tired. I don't feel tired. I feel great.
Mm-hmm.
And so we actually – and I think with some of these patients, it has to be conservative because if it's over the top and there's a drastic change, their friends and family will notice it and they'll feel embarrassed and mm-hmm. it can be, you know, kind of
a little too severe, one jump to another.
Yeah. And so we conservatively gave her some volume today and we put the mirror in front of her and when she walked out, she said, oh, my gosh.
She made a difference immediately.
This is unbelievable. So we see that day in and day out. So that's great.
I think that's a good point you make, because when I think of the face, I think of, like we started with you, Kim, it's really a process over time to see improvement. But when you can walk in and see like some immediate improvement, then I think that is very dramatic for the person.
Right. Immediate, and I think conservative, mm-hmm. but appropriate, mm-hmm. appropriately so. And I think we build on that. Once a patient understands and is confident with what we're doing and our plan of action, and we spell out a plan for each patient, customized plan, they'll feel more comfortable mm-hmm. with what's going on.
Yeah,
and the nice thing about some of the medicines that we use, there's a couple that actually we will inject today, and it will stimulate volume over a couple of months. So patients will come back 2 months later and say, this looks great, and let's add a little bit more. So it's not out of the box, you know, mm-hmm. Super dramatic to the point where they say, oh, my gosh, it's too much. Can you take it out?
Mm-hmm.
We don't hear a lot of that.
Yeah, very good. So I know one of the barriers to patients considering facelifts or face work or any of these kind of procedures that we've talked about today is cost, because insurance doesn't pay for it. Always comes up in every conversation that's elective. Why don't you talk just generally about cost and some options for patients? Because I think there's a lot more financing options and options today than there have been for a long time.
That's right. Our patient coordinator, Tammy Parker, is fabulous, and she talks this over with all patients. For me, and the counseling that I give patients is I tell patients it's great to shop around. You just have to be, as you spoke earlier of, be careful because you get what you pay for. I am not the world's fastest surgeon, never have been, but I'm not the slowest, and I tell patients this. But I put every suture in, and I did a big operation yesterday. I did it all myself. So last night I went to bed knowing that I did it myself. I thought it looked great. The patient's going to do super. And I don't have to worry about anything anyone else did. And so it's all me.
Mm-hmm.
With that,
that's a good accountability point, because I think a lot of – you have to ask the right question. And a lot of time patients do not understand.
And you're right. Patient education with, are you board certified in mm-hmm. what are you board certified in? Who does the operation? So it takes me longer, Tanya. It takes me a little bit longer. So I tell patients that we're not the most expensive in town for some of these procedures. We're not the cheapest because it takes me a little bit longer. But I think it's that handcrafted personal touch, knowing that I've done everything myself.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, these procedures take a while. Mm-hmm. And because of that, we're paying for the anesthesiologist, mm-hmm. who's the MD that keeps you asleep and mm-hmm. comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Patients are always asking, am I going to wake up in the middle?
Mm-hmm.
No, you're not. Mm-hmm. Yes, you're going to wake up at the end, but not
mm-hmm.
in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And you pay for the hospital.
Mm-hmm. The facility.
The facility.
You're going to have facility fee, anesthesia, and then the doctor fees.
Right. Mm-hmm. So there's a package there, and there are a number of options. There are some financing mm-hmm. companies that help out.
Mm-hmm.
But the nice thing is that we can talk to patients about planning for the future and what mm-hmm. it's going to take to mm-hmm. achieve the goal that they're looking for.
Okay, very, very good. Thank you for that. Okay, so before we sign off, it's hard to believe we're at the end of it, but we are. That flies, doesn't it, Kim?
Oh, yeah.
It goes by. I'd like to ask each of you for your perspective areas. Is there any new things you're excited about? Are there any tips that you'd like to leave your listeners with, or anything you'd like to reinforce? Why don't we start with you, Kim?
So the tips that I have are just, I went over them a little bit before, but just protect your skin from the sun.
Mm-hmm.
SPF is key. Exfoliate your skin, whether at home or come in and get, you know, an exfoliating treatment, microdermabrasion, chemical peels, and just moisturizing your skin either through serums, lotions, or creams.
Okay, very good. Dr. Connors, what about you?
On top of that, my philosophy, I like to repair the damage that's been done at night, and Kim helps us with that. You know, we use retinols and retin-A's mm-hmm. and hydroquinones, which are bleaching creams. So we repair at night mm-hmm. while you're sleeping, and we help you figure out a protocol that works best for you. And then we protect in the morning, mm-hmm. sunscreens and everything. As far as what's cutting edge and new, again, plastic surgeons are innovators.
Mm-hmm.
I am doing research right now on fat cell viability.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, not only do I do face surgery, but I do breast surgery and mm-hmm. other types of surgery. We are looking at how can we harvest a patient's fat cells and get them to live longer
mm-hmm.
in a higher percentage. So we're doing that research right now. It's a really exciting basic science research that I'm doing that will help. We also do some 3D imaging in our office so patients mm-hmm. can come in. And
I've seen that machine. Girls out there, he's very high tech.
It's great.
Going to have the latest, greatest of whatever you need in there.
Yeah. And that's how we really champion ourselves on being a high-tech office
mm-hmm.
to the point where it's appropriate and educates the patients.
Mm-hmm.
So I think education's key, and that's what we really look out for.
Okay, and very good. And while I have you here, I always like to take opportunities. Sometimes I think the physicians that come, the patient's perspective is they take care of these kind of patients. They don't see your whole spectrum of what all you're involved in or how you kind of give back to the community. But many times we've talked about you do give back and you have your own foundation to help with kids. So why don't you take it just a minute and tell us about that?
Sure. Well, when I left Boston, I had worked at the Boston Shriners Burn Hospital, which I thought was a fantastic experience. And I moved to Atlanta, and I was not able to find a burn hospital in the local area that serviced kids. And so I started Emergence Surgical Gifts, and it's a 501c3 charity, and we take care of burned children. We take care of any children that need any reconstructive plastic surgery. And it's really blossomed. We're now taking care of some of adults. We have partnered with the Good Samaritan Clinic in downtown Atlanta, so
very
homeless
good.
Patients.
Do you have a website for?
We do, emergencesurgicalgifts.org.
Very good. Thank you for that. Okay, and it is time for the end of our show. I appreciate both of you being here. Before we sign off, I want to make sure the listeners know how to reach you, so let's give them the office number.
Office number is 404-348-4456.
Yeah, so 404-348-4456. And your website?
www.johnconnorsmd.com. And we have a brand new website, just came up this weekend.
And what is that?
Same one.
You've just refreshed.
We gave
everything.
It a facelift.
Very good. And hopefully, after Kevin gives us the production from this, we'll have this show up there too, so you can always check back there. Well, I want to thank you both for coming and talking about faces and how we preserve and protect and improve over time. Really appreciate it. Thanks so much. And please check with our sponsor, www.healthgate.com. You can see some of Dr. Connor's offers on there that can help you get in faster if you're concerned about anything. So take time to visit that. Thanks so much. Check in with you next time.
The Doctor's Roundtable has been a production brought to you by HealthGate and Business Radio X. HealthGate is a groundbreaking website where board-certified doctors and specialists offer savings on out-of-pocket healthcare costs. For more information about HealthGate, please visit www.healthgate.com or call 404-692-5377. We hope you tune in next week, and thank you for listening.